Go ahead, Mike.
What number were you?
Well, I think there was one point that we wanted to make.
Go ahead.
For clarification purposes, the it was said that the third chart of the three charts, the concentrations were declining in response to the tenant well operation. That's not the case. That well is called MW16082, and the 082 means the depth of the of that well. It's only 82 feet deep, which is plenty deep, but the tenant well is screened from 190 to 420 feet deep, 100 feet deeper. Operation of the tenant well has no bearing whatsoever on the intermediate aquifer well at that location, at MW16. The concentration decline at that monitoring well, about 1,600 feet, quarter mile down gradient of the Olin site, is in fact in response to hydraulic containment at the Olin site. Has nothing to do with a tenant well operation. I think that was really the only point we wanted to make.
Aren't those right next to each other? The tenant
they
well
are,
and
the tenant Olin? Well is adjacent to the Olin site,
yeah,
but it's screened. This is where it becomes a three-dimensional problem. All of these wells are located on a map, and it looks like they might be right next to one another. That's true. But with respect to where the water comes out or enters the well, there's a whole depth perception that needs to be accounted for. So the tenant well, it does tap into the intermediate aquifer. We've called that at about 200 feet. So really, it's only the upper 10 feet of the screen from the tenant that's in the intermediate. The bulk of the screen is in the deep. So it's really pulling from an entirely different unit.
I thought I heard the mayor said it's screened at both the intermediate and the deep aquifers.
Technically, it does cross-screen into the intermediate. My only point is that it's just barely into the intermediate. The intermediate, the bottom of the intermediate aquifer is at about 200 feet. Below that is the deep aquifer. The tenant well is screened from 190 feet, just 10 feet above that boundary, then throughout the deep aquifer. So the vast majority of the water that's being pulled from the tenant well is, in fact, coming from the deep aquifer. But the fact that remains that the monitoring well that we've illustrated there is 100 feet shallower yet, and there's really no bearing whatsoever on the tenant well operation at that depth. Oh, sure. Thank you. So this is a cross-section. I like to tell everybody this is like taking a slice of the earth and looking at the side. Although it's a distant cross-section, I think the site is located right about here. This is the shallow aquifer. This is what we call the first aquitard, the AB aquitard. And then this zone, this first yellow zone, is really the upper part of the intermediate aquifer. And I believe it may be this well, or the equivalent of this depth is the location of that monitoring well. This blue bar here is the screen interval of the tenant well. So you can see that, and again, this small section here is what we would call the lower part of the intermediate. But we're talking about data up here in the shallow part, the upper part of the intermediate. And again, the vast majority of the screen is in what we call the deep aquifer, which really extends deeper.
And you're telling us that water goes downhill?
There, yes.
Okay.
I won't argue that water goes downhill. Yeah.
But even in that 10-foot section, it is pulling directly from that from the middle zone.
There is water coming in from the lower part of the intermediate into the tenant, but where we have monitoring wells in this area, we also have very low, if any, perchlorate concentrations whatsoever. When we talk about remediating the intermediate aquifer and the priority zones B and C, if we had another cross-section to show, priority zone A would actually, and B, I believe, would be limited to the upper part of the intermediate. And that makes sense. The perchlorate that's coming from the Olin site is coming from the surface. It's moving downward.
So they're essentially cleaning the deep aquifer.
They are pulling water from
the deep
aquifer.
I
don't believe that they're remediating the deep aquifer because it's not really, most of the perchlorate that we found is located further east, and the higher concentrations are located in the upper part of the intermediate. This area, we've got concentrations maybe 6 part per billion out of the tenant well, but again, beneath the site at this same interval, we used to have non-detect, and now there's perchlorate 20, 30 part per billion there. That's not cleaning up the deep aquifer.
Well, maybe it is. I mean, maybe it's just pulling it into that well where it's being extracted. So it wasn't there before. It was somewhere in the deep aquifer that you were going to have to get to anyway.
I think at
And now it's being pulled to that extraction point. So I don't know what the importance is.
I think there's another element to consider, too.
Okay.
The permeability of these depth intervals is very different. The shallow intervals are very coarse-grained, very fast, very permeable materials. The deep aquifer is a much tighter formation. Pulling something into a slow-moving, less permeable formation, that takes more time to clean up. Quite frankly, if it was pulled in from the intermediate, into the deep, that's a significant exacerbation. Cleanup in the intermediate is likely going to proceed much more quickly, and that's what we've shown in the cleanup feasibility study, because water moves through it much more quickly. By dragging perchlorate into the deep aquifer, where it's going to take longer to pull it out, that's a significant exacerbation. And again, that's not how a properly constructed extraction well should have been built or operated.
Okay. What about the city's position that monitored attenuation is not working?
I think
part of that is because, at least that they don't see that happening with their data.
At the tenant well specifically, I think was their point.
I believe that's right.
Yeah, as far as monitored attenuation, we're relying on the data that we're seeing. I mean, it's self-evident that that attenuation is occurring. There's a great number of wells that are no longer above 6. Their point about the tenant well not illustrating attenuation is not correct. The fact that they're inducing perchlorate into that depth and contaminating areas that weren't contaminated before, that's an exacerbation of a problem that's separate from monitored attenuation. And quite frankly, an extraction well is not where you would monitor, where you would demonstrate a monitored attenuation. Our point is down gradient of the extraction wells, where you're going to have physical processes to attenuate the perchlorate.
Like zone C or D.
Exactly.
Okay. So you think that the tenant well is contaminating
yes,
the
I
deep
do.
Aquifer, and where's the contamination coming from?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer. When we, like I said before, there is a very strong downward gradient. Groundwater from the intermediate, there's a strong potential for migration into the deep. Yet most of the perchlorate is in the uppermost part of the intermediate. When the tenant well came back online, the monitoring wells screened in this interval have gone consistently up to 20, 30, 40 parts per million, parts per billion, sorry. When we look at our monitoring wells right above that interval, we really don't see any concentrations to that to that degree. You know, there's still 3, maybe 4 parts per billion, only occasionally going above that. So I think that's a fair question where it's coming from. The fact remains, it's now beneath the site at a depth where it wasn't before. Whether it's being pulled down from some convoluted pathway, I should clarify, these gray areas represent silty zones. They're all aquitards. Mm-hmm. That impedes groundwater flow. That doesn't mean the groundwater can't move through it. It can, but it just takes a much longer period of time. This graphic does a fairly good justice to it. The distribution of these silty zones is pretty complicated, and they're not all laterally extensive. This one at the top generally seems to be, but when we're within the intermediate, we get what are called pinch-outs of these aquitards all the time. They might be little lenses of silts. They might go for a couple hundred yards and then stop. That all has to do with how these sediments were deposited, thousands of years ago. What that really means is this high perchlorate concentration might have been left alone up here, but with the induced vertical drawdown, it might have been forced to go around all of these aquitards and eventually enter the deep aquifer, and now it's swept back across through beneath the site towards the tenant well. That wouldn't have happened otherwise, and that was the reason why we didn't want the tenant well reoperated.
You know, it wouldn't have happened if you hadn't put the stuff in the ground in the first place. I have a hard time blaming Morgan Hill for moving perchlorate around.
Well, we're cleaning this perchlorate up now. And we've been concerned for many years that operation of a deep aquifer a municipal well is going to exacerbate an already complicated problem.
Right, but that's still your responsibility. These people, if they have to use their well, they have to use their well. That's part of the problem that you've caused. Now, whether using their well, which they need to do, creates more of a problem for you, that's your problem, not theirs. If they were doing it, doing something they didn't need to do, then fine. But I'm a little getting a little tired of this argument.
Okay. Any other board questions? Dr. Hunter?
I would like to have a better understanding of what the contingency plan development was going to be under the prior scenario, prior to the CAO changing the conditions. You said that treatment concentrated on the plume, mm-hmm. so the zone A, and a contingency plan. So what was the time frame for that, and how would you proceed with that?
The contingency plan that was included in the cleanup work plan, I'll try my best to recall the details, but basically the idea was to ensure, from the priority zone A standpoint, to ensure that, in fact, the extraction well that was installed for the, in this case, the intermediate aquifer, in fact, hydraulically captured priority zone A. The contingency would be, if it didn't, you could either pump, potentially reconfigure the extraction well itself to pump more water from it, possibly reconfigure the extraction system itself, the treatment system, I should say, to receive more water, and if need be, install additional extraction wells until you obtain the hydraulic capture. There's, as we've talked about before, there's still some question about, since we haven't hydraulically tested that well yet, how much is it going to take to hydraulically capture that? That's the whole process that we've been moving through. So that was one element of the contingency. And there were other contingencies on the treatment side. If, for whatever reason, the ion exchange system wasn't adequate or effective, that there might be a consideration of other treatment systems. And I believe that there was some contingency on the disposition side. But I think what we're talking about today mostly is the idea of capture. On the monitored attenuation standpoint, we propose that if concentrations, when we plot statistically, and I understand, I think it was your point earlier about the public relying on statistics. Unfortunately, that's a tool that is used by many guidelines in order to evaluate a particular system, and a complicated one like this. We've proposed a method for monitoring the concentrations that our hypothesis, essentially, is that concentrations will drop over time. The contingency is that if they don't, or in the worst case, they actually increase for some reason, that additional either monitoring or redesign of the monitoring network itself would be implemented, and if need be, additional remediation would be implemented. And that could mean additional hydraulic control.
I'd like to add that the remedial contingency that Mike Taraski is describing was included in the cleanup work plan, which is still under review. And we have several comments regarding refinement of the remedial contingency plan that we will be issuing after we get around to getting that out, which hopefully will be shortly.
And what's the time frame on that plan as it was
the remedial contingency plan?
Yeah.
We've originally in the cleanup work plan, Olin will be submitting on January 31st, 2008. They'll be submitting the baseline on what they're going to measure against, whether MA or monitor attenuation is working or not. And we've asked them in our response, which is still forthcoming, to include certain aspects of the remedial contingency plan, improving upon it in that submittal. However, it hasn't been finalized, so I can't tell you the exact date we're going to require those updates, but it's a very important part of this whole process that we're taking very careful consideration of.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Any other board questions? No. Okay. Mr. Hayashi, none? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. I don't believe we have any more speakers either.
Has Olin completed their remarks?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
They have. We're finished.
Why don't we check and make sure? Is there anyone else who, any card we're missing here? Anyone else who had comments on this item? Okay.
Okay. So public comment is closed.
Before you get to board discussion, I'd like to provide a final recommendation. And in order to do that, I'm wondering if we can take a 10-minute break so that I can get together with staff.
Yeah. And do that. That would be fine. You need 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. 20 minutes of four, we'll return here.
Thank you.
Okay, folks, it looks like staff has returned, and we'll resume our meeting. Excuse me, folks, we'd like to resume our meeting. If you'd like to talk, would you please go outside to do so? Okay, thank you. Mr. Briggs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks to everyone who is here for this item and has contributed both in terms of your written comments as well as your attendance and participation today. I think it's been very helpful. First of all, one of the things that we didn't really point out or certainly didn't dwell on is that this is a huge site. It's the biggest site that we have in terms of the aerial extent and the depth. The entire magnitude and complexity of the site is the biggest one we have in our region, and it's, don't have specifics, but probably one of the best or the biggest ones in the country. And considering the magnitude of the site, Olin has made really rapid progress in terms of characterization and in terms of remediation thus far. And I don't think we should lose sight of that. At the same time, as I was saying earlier, our job is to make sure that that continues to proceed as aggressively as possible, as aggressively as is reasonable. And, of course, that's where it gets tough, is trying to determine exactly where that line is on all these issues. And everyone has their own opinion about that. With the change that we had proposed in the cleanup order, we were pushing for a more aggressive schedule. And the basic tenant there, is that a good word to use? Basic tenant there was if more perchlorate is removed more rapidly, we're going to get faster cleanup. And again, I was trying to focus not so much on just existing well users. They're extremely important, but that's not the sole extent of our job. We're also looking at the groundwater as a resource. We're looking at potential users, and then we had some discussion about the fact that there are agricultural users as well. And those are all valid points, and so we've got to keep our eye on the ball of cleanup of the basin, not just attaining maximum contaminant levels for drinking water wells. One of the speakers said that MCL is irrelevant, maximum contaminant level is irrelevant, and I think I get what she was driving at, and that is that we've stated that the goal is background as far as cleanup, and that's very true. However, there's another complication, and we get these things mixed up, and that has to do with the replacement water issue, and the MCL is critical there because that is the trigger as far as replacement water goes. So it's sometimes tough to avoid mixing those things up, but when we're talking about the requirement for wellhead treatment or for replacement water of some sort, that's the MCL. It's not cleanup to background. It's too bad they're not the same thing, but we got to deal with that. And we did fight that battle with the state board, and we lost, so because we were going for four. We had a comment about someone provided us with, I'm sorry, I've forgotten your name, but provided language regarding sort of the TMDL approach, which would be an adaptive management approach as far as the cleanup of the basin. And we see that what we're proposing here is adaptive. We've talked about that in terms of having a contingency plan. That means adapting to changes and changing the plan as necessary as we see changes. So we think it's appropriate to stick with the proposal that we, the basic concept that we had for you, which was to be more aggressive, to with a goal of not only going after priority zone A, but going after priority zone B. And really, that's getting closer to the fact that the ultimate goal is to get all the perchlorate out of the basin, as much as is practical anyway. However, I think we need some clarification in the order. And so, and by the way, we have a little more latitude with the way we have framed this, because we're asking for direction from the board for me to issue the cleanup abatement order. And that means we don't have to have all the I's dotted, et cetera. But we need to have clear direction on what the order is supposed to do. So, but we do have latitude in terms of exact wording. So what we want to do on D, which is on page 20 of the draft CAO, is the very last sentence of that first paragraph in D says, in addition to hydraulic containment of priority zone A, in the intermediate aquifer, the discharge is required to either hydraulically contain priority zone B in the intermediate aquifer only, or provide an alternative plan for attaining priority zone B hydraulic containment.
Where are you, Roger?
Okay, again, paragraph D of page 20.
It's attached. Do you see it, Gary? It's attached to the yellow supplemental sheet.
I got it.
Okay.
Okay, so again, we got the paragraph. If you look at the last sentence of that first paragraph, which begins with, in addition to hydraulic containment, you see that? Okay. So in addition to hydraulic containment priority zone A in the intermediate aquifer, the discharger is required to demonstrate hydraulic containment of priority zone B in the intermediate aquifer only, or provide an alternative plan, and then go on from there.
Well, how is that better? That gives them...
What you had. But by that you mean they need to show that they're also cleaning up B?
Right. So let me tell you what the concept is. That they would proceed with the existing plan. They have an extraction well that's in the works. We don't want to slow that down. So they would proceed with that. We have testimony that we don't know until that's tested exactly how much capture there's going to be. The goal is to go after B. If that extraction well can get all or most of B, that's great. To the extent that it can't, we want to see a plan for what it would take to get that incremental containment of B. And that would be reflected on page 22 of the order, item number 4, where it says by April 15th, 2008. I think it already says just what I said, that they would, the latter part says the cleanup plan shall propose groundwater containment system that will provide effective plume migration control and cleanup of priority zones A and B. So what that says to me is if they are not able to contain B with the existing extraction well, they have to provide a plan at that point. And then we'd evaluate that. And we would determine whether or not that's reasonable. If it's completely unreasonable, we would make an adjustment. Does that clarify it, I hope?
Somewhat.
Somewhat.
Yeah. What about, well, go ahead. Any other proposed changes by staff?
That's basically it, unless I'm missing something from my notes.
What about with zone C and D?
Mm-hmm.
Right now it's left to monitored attenuation.
Correct.
And the way I heard Owen describe what would happen if it, with the first set of monitoring, if that doesn't pan out, that they would just, I think, redo their monitoring scheme. And it seems like a very passive approach to trying to clean up that part of the contamination.
No, I think the idea is if the attenuation is not proceeding as rapidly as anticipated, then we have to reevaluate, and that could include active remediation.
And do we have some sort of criteria for what that looks like, of what we anticipate, or at what point we decide, nope, not enough, or, yeah, you're doing fine?
Well, I think our main benchmarks thus far have been we were talking about how many wells were over six 2-3 years ago versus how many wells are over six now in the most recent quarter. And that gives us an indicator, an overall trend. It's certainly not the only way to look at it, but it seems like a pretty good one. So that would be one way to continue to look at it.
I think we also need to look at how fast it's moving, not just the fact that, you know, something might have gone down by 0.1 or
right.
something. I mean, there needs right. to be some activity here, not just something beyond, you know, natural attenuation.
Right.
Could be.
Otherwise, it's not working.
You could also tell by the volume of the perchlorate that you take out, too, can't you?
Well, as far as the active remediation, that aside from cutting off the source in the upper valley so that doesn't continue to migrate on down into the lower area, really that's not going to have any effect on, like I say, other than cutting off the source, it's not going to have any effect on that vast lower area to the south that was the mm-hmm. green and yellow that you saw. That really is going to be dependent on dispersion dilution.
Yep. Okay.
Roger, may I add something?
Sure.
In terms of monitor attenuation, determining whether it's an effective remedy, it's not going to only be just monitoring which wells are above six, how many. There will be a spatial evaluation, temporal, and trend analysis. There's going to be several methods for evaluating that. It just hasn't been worked out completely because we still need to review that carefully. And in addition to that, we are reviewing Olin's groundwater flow and transport model currently. Someone from the DTSC that's going to be evaluating how reasonable the model is in predicting time frames, and that's ongoing.
I think the basic direction that I need from the board in terms of how to proceed with the CAO is you've heard Olin say going after A is sufficient. If that's the case, it's going to look more like the first draft cleanup abatement order. If you agree with our staff recommendation that going after B is appropriate, it'll be the changes that we just discussed. If you agree with folks who say that there should be active remediation for C, then that's a different ballgame. We have to include a submittal of a plan for doing active remediation beyond B.
Well,
I think that's a basic question for the board.
Well, the board, each of us can weigh in on that. I'm in favor of the revisions to the CAO so that active remediation is planned now for B.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know what the date is, kind of some kind of a drop-dead date on when staff is going to decide whether active remediation is working or not for C and or D, so that it's just not left hanging there where you're monitoring and monitoring. But are you going to make a decision in 1 year? Or do you have any timeline set where you're going to decide, you know what, active remediation is not working, perhaps we need to come up with monitored attenuation is not working, perhaps we need to shift to active remediation?
We have annual progress reports that address the effectiveness.
Okay.
So we will be evaluating those on an annual basis. And, of course, we'll be looking at it constantly.
Well, I think I would feel more comfortable. I don't know how the rest of you do, but if there was something a little more definite time-wise as to that particular component that the board can get, the staff can get back to us and let us know that you have made some conscious decision to continue with attenuated remediation versus anything else for C and D.
Right. Of course, as you know, from the onset with this case, we've been bringing progress reports to you pretty darn regularly. So at a minimum, I would say that since this order requires this annual comprehensive look at the effectiveness of this scheme, then it would be appropriate for us to judge whether we think that it is effective enough for that time period. Because one of the things is a determination if the remedial contingency plan so must be implemented. So that's a decision point.
Okay.
We could bring that to the board and say, here's what we've found, and we think either it's still working or it's not.
And is that January of 09?
Right.
Because that would be about a year's worth of data from now. Okay.
Well, and annually.
Okay. Well,
Mr.
I'd like
Chair.
Yes.
Maybe in addition, as part of the status updates that we periodically do, we can also bring to the board a more detailed evaluation of what the contingency plan looks like. That is the backup plan to monitor attenuation. What are the triggers? And walk through that, make that a little more transparent as well, so you understand what Plan B looks like and how we get from monitored attenuation to Plan B if MA doesn't, monitored attenuation doesn't work.
That's fine. That'd be helpful.
Okay.
I'm looking for some date when a decision gets made so that you shift from one to the other.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I just want to say that because this is an order to OLA, not to staff,
right.
If you want a date for that, you wouldn't, and you want a decision by the staff or your executive officer of whether it's not working, you wouldn't want to put in the order a date for that to happen, but rather direct your executive officer to bring back to you at a date certain of that kind of information if you want to make
okay. Well, Mr.
By Rick, a certain date.
What's an appropriate date that we can ask staff for you to come back to us? January?
Well, the report is due annually the end of January.
Right. Okay.
That means the February meeting would not work. So is March reasonable?
March of 09. Then we can. Okay. Then
and if it's still acceptable, then it would be another annual review after that.
Right. Okay. Then, yeah. Let me just get one. My last thing on it, because I'd like all of you to kind of address these things too, so staff knows how to go.
This is related to the way in which we're going to see the evaluation.
Okay.
I'm just wondering if, in addition to considering time, are we ever going to be in a position to see any kind of metrics as trigger points for more active remediation or more expanded remediation? In other words, like, are you going to be able to say from the groundwater flow and transport model, are you going to be able to look at that and come up with some kind of time frame projection that says if we don't see this kind of decrease in this amount of time, so this 5-year, 12-year, whatever, you know, extended period of time we're looking at, are we going to get something that's going to correlate how quickly it's moving and at what point we say this isn't fast enough? So do you understand what I'm saying?
Part of the information that's being required, the additional information or clarification with respect to the remedial contingency plan requires some of those trigger points. Requires Owen to provide more definitive description of what those trigger points would be and how exactly we're going to be able to make a determination as to whether or not the decreases that are expected are happening as anticipated. I mean, other than by looking at the data, I mean, which is the primary way that we've been doing it so far.
I guess so. What I'm trying to envision is we see that it's decreasing, and so we can say that within a year and 2 years and 3 years, definitely the trend is down. But at some point, do we get metrics that say at this rate, C and D zones will be cleaned up in 20 years? I mean, because of the extensive size of it. Are we going to be able to get to a point within that first few years where we can look at the pace of change and make some projections and maybe decide that something more active for C and D is going to be required?
I believe that once the hydraulic containment system begins operation and has done so for some time, and we have an opportunity to review the data and see exactly what the capture zone is and how effective it is, that we'll be able to make some of those predictions.
Okay. Anything else on that? Okay. The last point for me is direction on this issue of replacement water for the tenant well. And if I understand that the San Pedro well replaces the tenant well water, and I understand what happened, why that was done, and that was some kind of a trade done to take tenant out of production. I don't have a problem with that. But if the city has continued to have water demand increasing, they're entitled to drill into their aquifer to get more water. And if they're coming up with insufficient water supply and they've got a well that they can use, they just happen to be using it, I think at some point, in my mind, they should be somehow compensated for that cost to clean the water to make it potable. Now, how we do that, you know, I don't know. You know, when that gets done, I mean, when that starts, how much of that cost they should be entitled to recover, and in what manner, I'm not sure. But I'd like the other board members, you know, to kind of weigh in on that. That's my last issue in terms of giving staff some direction on an issue that I have with this. So if someone else, Roger, drilled a well a mile south of Tennant,
mm-hmm.
and they wanted that water for their water supply, but lo and behold, it has perchlorate in it, wouldn't we be requiring Olin to clean that water?
Well, that was the analogy I was making.
Right, right. It just so happens that well that's a mile
right.
south happens to be the Tennant well.
Right.
Because of their need for water.
One note of clarification is
okay.
you're not arguing that it should be a remediation well. And I think we've received evidence today that it's not an appropriate remediation well.
Well,
you're arguing a different premise.
I'm not. Okay.
It would not be within the authority of the board to order Olin to use the tenant well as a remediation well, because you cannot specify the manner of compliance. That would not, you know, be up to Olin to propose what appropriate remediation is and for you to look at that, but you couldn't order them. You must use the tenant well.
You make a different point, though.
Right.
Yeah.
But the other issue is
okay.
that, according to the evidence in the record, Olin has replaced the tenant well with the San Pedro well. If Morgan Hill chooses to drill some other well and it's contaminated, you know, polluted, then above 6, then you would certainly have the authority to order Olin to replace that well under the water code. But right now, according to the evidence in the record, Olin has already replaced the tenant well with the San Pedro well. And the previous council here sent a letter to Morgan Hill to that effect, that the board doesn't have the authority to order Olin now to replace the tenant well because they've already done so. And it's creating other issues, but...
But that seems to mean that if the city went ahead and drilled another well and it came up contaminated...
Right, then you could order Olin to replace...
But we've already... They've already replaced tenant.
Because they've already replaced the one that...
Yeah.
The tenant well.
Yeah, they've replaced it. The only thing that you could do, they would have to do, is they have to do the wellhead treatment.
All right. Okay, I've said my piece. The rest of the board, go ahead. Dr. Hunter?
And so just so I'm clear, there is no way to then add the condition that wellhead treatment at tenant well is something that Olin should be responsible for?
Not at this time, based on the information you have. And, you know, I'm happy to research that more and provide more information about it. But based on the information you have in this record, Olin has already replaced the tenant well with the San Pedro well, and it operates at higher amount, you know, produces more water than the well they replaced.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the, you know, the Water Code 13304 says you can order them to replace the well, and they actually did it, so you don't need to order them to do it because they already did it.
So based on the information we have now means we know that the tenant well was replaced by the San Pedro well. That's the information you're...
Right.
And so there isn't, it's not that we're missing or need more information about other conditions that might change what Olin has to do relative to restoring drinking water or improving groundwater. None of the other dimensions to this, to the actions that they're responsible for, touch on the tenant well. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
Yeah, okay.
Well, what about the fact that they've drilled some additional wells and they've come up?
Right, so what I'm saying is there may be other information that the board could order that Olin to replace other wells or other issues, but replacing it specifically, the request is to order Olin to do wellhead treatment or something to address the tenant well, but Olin already did that by paying for an alternative well. And so you'd order them, making them twice replace the same well. But if they had another problem, then you could order them to do that.
It just seems that since the city has gone to the effort to locate alternative drinking water supply wells, and that has not been fruitful, they're going to continue to go through that process that the ratepayers are going to absorb those costs. And at some point, Olin may get...
Right, there may be further information that's appropriate for this board to order Olin to replace wells, but specifically the tenant well, the information in the record now is they already did that. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Okay.
Anything else, Dr. Hunter?
No.
No? Mr. Hodgen, do you want to weigh in? Or?
Oh, are you asking me to comment on the CAO?
Anything else?
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, no, I would like to say that...
go ahead.
I think the... the addition of B, the priority zone B, I think is a reasonable request given the length of time that all of these different dimensions and remediation... processes take in terms of planning and design and review and etc. So I would not like to see a plan go forward that simply relies on addressing only priority zone A, and primarily because of the fact that zone B is the primary source of drinking water, and now that we understand it also may be the primary source for ag use, and that again is very important to that area. I would like to I just don't think that the monitoring natural attenuation processes for zone B is acceptable. I think we need to be more active, and I do support the staff in that recommendation. I would like to see the benchmarks for considering the effectiveness of A and B, and also consider how quickly I would like to see a time frame at some point that tells us when we're going to see impacts, improvements in C and D as well, since it seems that the public drinking water supply may be drawing as the area grows and as water supply demands increase, it may be that the deeper aquifer is going to be a source of drinking water more so than it is now, and so we need to consider that in terms of the time frame. When can we tell the city and the area and the community residents that we are effectively cleaning up the groundwater basin and restoring their water supply? So that would be my view, so I would support the A and B plan combined.
Yes.
Mr.
Mr. Hodgen?
I'm very sympathetic to the issue of not having adequate water supply in the Morgan Hill area and the need for additional sources. It does seem to me that what we have in front of us indicates that there has been substantial improvement over the last couple of years, and the new well that's about the new extraction well that's about ready to come online may very well answer a lot of the questions that have been coming up regarding how quickly things are going to improve and what's going to happen with the B area and so forth. I was a little concerned when there was some talk about putting an additional extraction well at the south end of the plume. I'm not an engineer, but I do know something about water, and I would think that would be a terrible thing to do. Perhaps if another well is extraction well is needed, it should be sited in some other area. With that said, I think we should go ahead with the modifications that we've talked about here and direct the administrator to
issue the plan for
issue the
as modified
in order. Yes.
Okay. But so your concern would be with that second well maybe going in zone B, is that
the way we were talking about it?
Yeah.
Here, I think that
that's problematic.
A very poor area to put one in. It's going to exacerbate the problem.
Right. Okay. All right. Mr. Shallcross.
Yeah. I'm going to start with the tenant well issue. I know our attorney thinks it's pretty much dead in the water at this point, but I don't know. And I thought it was originally, too, but the more I started thinking about it, the more I thought it might have some legs here. I'm not sure it does. I'm just wondering if it's something that Morgan Hill would be interested in sending a brief on how they think we legally can do this. I don't know. Is that something you'd be willing to look at?
Certainly.
Well, it would be both parties.
Of course, both parties.
Yeah, to submit something.
And I'm talking only about the legal issues, not the, you know, equitable issues or the, you know. Just legally, how do you think we can actually make that ruling and, you know, probably what, 10 pages? Probably no more than 10 pages. Three? You want fewer pages? Five, okay?
Mr. Hawk, he needs at least 20 pages, right, for his...
I usually don't get walked up.
Right.
We'll start at 7, then.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
Just so I understand, are these concurrently filed parallel briefs, or is Olin to respond?
Yeah, I think that they could be, you know, certainly concurrently filed, and then with certainly a reply that would be concurrently filed.
Right. What I see is the issue is that according to my predecessor's letter back to Morgan Hill, the San Pedro well has replaced the tenant well. Mm-hmm. Olin paid for that, and therefore Olin does not have to pay again to replace or treat the tenant well. But there sounds like there's a lot of information about different wells and use of wells, and that's what I would be interested in knowing, if there's any advice to give the board about that issue. And it's pretty much independent of this order and may come into the order later, but I mean, you don't have to do this, but if you want to.
I see on the mic.
Just turn it on. Turn the bottom on.
Okay. There's information in the record, obviously, that we think you're not looking at. So we get to restate everything. You want new stuff? What do you want?
Yeah, you can.
However you want to do it is fine.
That's right.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I would suggest just leaving it up to the attorneys to throw.
Right, we can talk about
mud against
later.
The wall. Isn't that the way to do this? Yeah. Perhaps the board could issue a request for briefs on the specific issue they want. The issue I have is Morgan Hill obviously has information about their water supply needs that aren't in any record that I know of, nor have I ever seen them. So if they're going to rely on facts that I can't even rebut, it really gets to be a messy issue.
Right.
And maybe just later next week or something, the three of us can just have a conversation about it.
That, just call us, that, call us when.
Yeah.
Right.
That would be fine also.
Okay.
Coordinate with you.
All right. That's fine.
Okay. And really, I'm just interested in how legally we can do it, not in the substance. Yeah, okay. You got that. You know, I have a hard time with this 12.4. It, you know, it was a number that the EPA threw out there. It's convenient for you guys to hang your hat on.
24.5.
I mean, 24.5. Yeah. And it's just, it really has no reality to this, to what we're doing here. So I was happier with having them do out to B. I would like to see some active remediation out to C myself, because that, after all, is this 6 parts per billion that we all seem to be stuck with. Olin has used that number to cut off people from replacement drinking water. I think Olin's bought into that number. I don't see why they shouldn't have to clean up to that number a little more actively than the monitored attenuation. So I'll go along with this, but I really think we need to keep this moving as quickly as possible with staff's recommendation. I'm really sort of embarrassed to be voting for it, even at this level. And then on the bottled water, if someone could answer, what is the folks who are getting bottled water, what is the levels between what and what?
Well, users with wells that have perchlorate greater than 6, if they have a detection of 6 at one time, they'll get 4 consecutive quarters of water, regardless of whether it's above 6 or below 6.
And then up to what? And then they get wellhead treatment.
Oh, 7.9.
Anything above 7.9.
7.9. A lot of these folks, I'm assuming, have been on bottled water for quite a while.
Since 2002, I believe.
Okay. To me, at that point, this is 5 years later, it's not replacement water. Tap water that you turn on is a lot different than a big bottle that some poor old folk might have to pick up. So that's not replacement water. I'm sorry. It's not replacing tap water. And so I think we need to, I would like to see something where these folks might get wellhead treatment at some level. Maybe it's folks who have been on it for 4 years or something at some point, if they're still above 6. It just can't go on like this for years and years and years. Then, to me, it's not replacement water. You know, I wish we could go below the 6 parts per billion, but we're stuck with that. So. That's it.
Well, but then, do you want staff to look at that issue and get back to us?
Yeah, and I don't know, can it be added into the CAO, or could it be done in a different order?
I mean,
just get back to us and tell us if that's doable.
Right.
And why not?
We've been going in accordance with the state water order, which says replacement water, whether that's IX or bottled water. We don't have a say over, so I think it's more of a legal issue.
Right, so I can look into it.
Oh, okay, can you?
Yes.
Because at this point, I don't think it is replacement water.
Okay, and I'll give you.
Mr. Hayashi.
I'm the last one.
Well, you're sitting
you want
down
us to
at
hear
that end.
No. Yeah, I'll support the new staff change. I think that if we just keep this thing going, it's better than stopping it. And we'll get a report back in a year, and then we'll see it. And if there's anything that we need to change, we'll change it then. So I will support you.
Okay. All right. Any other board comments or discussion? I don't think we don't even need to take a vote.
Yeah. Yes, you do, since you're asked to direct the executive officer.
Okay. Approval based on our discussion.
Okay. Well, do we need a formal motion?
Yeah.
We do.
We got a motion and a second.
We do. Okay. All those in favor of
Aye.
The motion?
Aye.
Any
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion carries.
Excuse me?
Yes.
Who made the motion?
David.
Thank you.
J. John seconded.
John seconded. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone.
To be continued, obviously. We're not completely done with this issue, by no means. Okay.